That wasn't enough. There's a warm-up show at 6 featuring a little bit of a wider variety of roots and branches of bluegrass music. So tune in each morning, 6 for the warm-up show, 6:30 for the main show, Pacific Pickin' on CITR 101.9 in Vancouver.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Dropped into Juicebox Radio, where sexuality educators quench your search for responsible, progressive sexuality over your lifespan. Landed in the box. Yes, that's Juice Box. And tonight we're hot for teacher. Yes, CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. You've landed in Juice Box. Maybe you're one of our many online international podcast listeners at CITR.ca or later in life at juiceboxradio.com. Anyway, you got here, we're sexified to have you. So Caroline and I tonight are going to be talking about back to school sex, the feature that we usually do here on Juicebox for the first week back in school. And I think, you know, last week we talked about fantasies and we all have them. Just some of us are more skilled at creating them than others. And some of us are more sexual than others. But all of us have had a first time or plan on having a first time. So we're going to be talking about that tonight. And do you wait till marriage? Do you do it with your hot lesbian lover for the first time and be penetrated by those dildos? Do you? What do you do? What do you do?
Well, I think that's what we're going to be teaching everyone tonight.
Yeah, so we're going to be talking all about kind of popping your cherry. And as Caroline said so much, I don't know if you wrote this part, honey, but it's very cute. About the cherry popping on Facebook as you advertised the show.
Yes,
tonight.
I did.
You're a brilliant little writer, you are.
Thank you, darling.
So, did you want to wait till you got married, Caroline? I never did. I had no intention.
Really? Even when we were kids, you wanted to do this?
Although I'm still a virgin today.
Of course.
But no, I didn't want to wait. No, there was no intention of waiting. I saw my parents having sex when I was very young. And, you know, I was the sex educator on the block since I was 7 years old. So really, marriage was not in the cards. For my sex life.
For my sex life, it was completely in the cards. Even though my I can't speak tonight. I can't focus and do two things at once. Even though my cousin and I used to practice giving birth to babies, where it's stuff a teddy bear up.
Oh, I did that.
My nightgown and all that stuff.
I used to do that too. It's good that you remember those things. I didn't remember till now.
Oh,
thanks to your memory bank.
Well, I like that. And we also used to play wedding, where we'd argue over who got to play the bride, because we wanted to dress up in frilly tutu-like things and get those 10-cent
rings.
Be a
princess.
Exactly, with a little tiara and, for whatever reason, a magic wand instead of bouquet. So, yes, for me, losing my virginity was all about getting married, waiting, having it on my honeymoon where it'd be snowing and I'd be on the fur skin rug and hear Elvis's I Can't Help Falling in Love with You in the background with the crackling fire. And just on the back, on that carpet, having
sex.
Being
made love to.
Yes.
Now, you know, this is the thing why some people are better at discussing fantasies and creating them in their minds. I would never think of these details. This is fabulous. How to lose your virginity on a wedding night. Caroline found a fabulous article, so we're going to quickly cover that. So for couples who have already had premarital sex, the wedding night is just the first night of the rest of their lives. But for a virgin, the wedding night is full of anticipation and sometimes fear of the unknown. Losing your virginity on your wedding night can be a beautiful experience with some careful planning. Follow these steps to make your first time special.
Things you'll need: sexy lingerie, sensuous food, candles, which are optional if you don't know how to light matches, rose petals.
Bubble bath, and I like
lubricant.
This one, lubricant. Right, so step one, prepare in advance, ladies and gentlemen. Read literature about losing your virginity to understand what happens. Talk to your partner and share any worries or concerns. Explore your body beforehand. Understand what feels good and be able to communicate what you enjoy sexually with your partner.
Step two, take a nap when your wedding is over and before it begins. Weddings are huge, stressful events.
Step three, set the mood. Light candles, if you know how to use a match. Cover the bed in rose petals. Whatever it takes to make your wedding night special and romantic. Put on lingerie so you can be like a whore for your new husband. Losing your virginity is a special experience. Wearing sexy underwear makes you feel more attractive.
Step four, order room service. There's no need to rush this night. Take time feeding each other a light meal. Light, keywords, so you don't get cramps or farts or burps. And
make sure there's sensual and romantic.
Romantic foods to get you in the moods. Oysters.
Step five.
Vanilla.
Have a bubble bath. As a virgin, you may be unfamiliar with a naked body or feel intimidated. So get naked with your new spouse in hot soapy bubbles and get to know each other's bodies a little better. Get used to touch with a sensual massage.
Step six, make the experience comfortable. Take time kissing and caressing and stimulate all the pleasure centers of the body. The loss of virginity may cause discomfort, so use lube.
Oh, God. I can't do it anymore. I can't do it anymore. You know, movies like The 40-Year-Old Virgin make this notion that we just read incredibly romantic. But is waiting for marriage really a reality for a lot of people? Or is it good for your health? Caroline found some fascinating research about whether or not waiting for marriage for sex is good for your health, waiting for later in life.
Apparently, those who lose their virginity at a later age, around 21 or 23 years of age, tend to be more likely to experience sexual dysfunction problems later in life, says researchers at Columbia University and New York State Psychiatric Institute's HIV Center for Clinical and Behavioral Studies.
So you know. This is good if it's coming from Columbia. And the study apparently appeared in the January 2008 issue of the American Journal of Public Health. So it's a journal peer-reviewed article, and we're going to go over it because I think there's some good points in it.
Apparently, men who lose their virginity in their 20s particularly seem more likely to experience sexual problems that include difficulty to become sexually aroused and reach orgasm. The increase in sexual problems was seen in those who had a comparably earlier sexual debut. debut star. And the researchers were quick to point out that there isn't enough evidence to say for sure whether or not waiting to have sex necessarily leads to dysfunction down the road. When our studies do not allow for casual interpretations.
Causal, meaning one thing's causing the other.
Thank you, darling.
Mm-hmm. Good thing to put my education to good use.
I like it, and I need to get my eyes checked.
Well,
as we both know.
I had a feeling you would trip on that, but it is causal. The results from the study the authors are writing say that there may be factors common to both the delay of sexual activity and the onset of sexual dysfunction. For example, men with a sexual problem may avoid sexual interactions and then consequently start later. But not necessarily, they're not saying that if, you know, everyone who starts later in their study shows that they have sexual dysfunctions or potentially, but that some of them, there's a causal interpretation in that they may avoid sexual interactions and consequently start later because they have sexual problems to begin with. And then there's some men who have no sexual problems at all. They just choose to wait till later, or they are socially awkward or whatever the case may be, that they don't start having sexual intercourse sooner, you know, like by the time they're 18 or whatever. Not that that's the benchmark, anyone, but, you know, I think if you haven't been laid by the time you're 18, maybe that's my personal opinion. Now, these researchers they're looking at data from a 1996 cross-sectional survey of more than 8,000 U.S. adults and found that those who started having sex at a relatively young age were more likely to have certain risk factors for STIs, which I think is kind of common knowledge. And a lot of the proponents for abstinence-based education in the school system talk about that, saying that, you know, the earlier you start having sex, the more at risk you are to STIs, cervical cancer, etc. There is research out that suggests this. So they use this one a lot in the research. But also, you know, a high number of sexual partners, there's also a correlation. I don't think there's causation on this one, but there's correlation between number of sexual partners and cervical cancer or STIs. I mean, obviously, the STI factor could go up because, you know, the more people you get exposed to, the more you're sleeping with all the other people they've slept with, and et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, I think that the risk factors often are because they have sex under the influence of alcohol. This National Sexual Health Survey, it was conducted by the Center for AIDS Prevention Studies. So even though it was University of California, San Francisco, you still have to always read these things with a critical eye. Who's paying for the research? What are they going after? How are they wording the questions and things like that? Who's answering the questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so.
Well, it's not clear from the survey whether or not the early or late starters both seem to have more sexual dysfunction, whether it was the early people or the late people, according to the researchers. But they're finding
could be because they're drinking when they have sex and then they get an STI because they're not using a condom.
It could be. It's hard to say.
Mm-hmm. So both early and late starters tend to have more sexual dysfunction. They're not clear why, but they're saying that this is what's happening. Right?
Mm-hmm. And the findings, according to the researchers, are casting some doubts on the benefit of the abstinence-only sex education that's been introduced in the U.S. public schools. Isn't that a scary thought, Julia? Would you go into a school and say no sex?
Well, I always make sure I include abstinence as an option because I think that's important that students know that they don't ever have to have sex if they don't want to. There's a lot of students out there who get freaked out about these things and don't want to, especially younger ones. You know, the 13 and 14-year-olds that I teach sometimes are absolutely petrified of the whole thing, and they just don't want to even think about it. So I always teach that, and then it's always an option. If you have sex once and you feel like it really makes you feel uncomfortable, you can always go back to abstinence. So I think abstinence is important. We can all be abstinent in our life. I think it's a powerful place to choose from. There's nothing wrong with it. But to only teach from that creates problems, and this article speaks to that quite a bit, which is good.
It does.
What problems we're talking about, why they happen. So it's a good discussion base, this article. So going on to say that both early and late starters were at increased risk of problems in sexual function. This was true primarily of men. I don't agree with this, though, but whose problems included difficulty maintaining an erection and reaching orgasm. I don't think I can agree with that. I think that men maybe might have problems maintaining an erection if they had issues with maintaining an erection from the very early on because they started having sex too soon, and then they started to correlate their inability to keep an erection with their actual ability, so they start getting that block in their mind. So that's one of the problems that can happen with having sex too early. Late starters might be anxious about having sex, so they don't feel like they have any skills, and so they kind of don't have any practice, and they feel this pressure to perform.
So does it come down to self-esteem?
I think so. I mean, it's not necessarily the case in the early starters. I think that they just get this, because our men's penises don't work that well as far as maintaining an erection goes, until they're about 17, the erection waxes and wanes quite a bit in a sexual experience. And so sometimes a boy will have these early sexual experiences and will start to associate their inability with an issue that they actually have, which is actually a normal physiological thing, but they still think that there's something wrong with them because they're not keeping up like the porn magazines and the porn movies that they see.
And there are some families that where the father will take their 16-year-old son and have sex with a prostitute.
There are some cultures that do that.
It happens in North America, in Canada, in Vancouver.
Sure. Well, you know, sex education comes in all forms.
It does.
I think it starts in the family.
It does. But the point being is it just, it's a lot of pressure, as you're saying.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to reiterate that point because I think it's a really valid one that you made.
Mm-hmm. So this Sanford and his colleagues are writing about although they're finding support and association between early initiation of sex and long-term STI risk, they also suggest a much more complicated picture of sexual functioning, which I'm grateful for, because there's a lot of other levels that go on with sexuality beyond just the physical, right? Delaying sexual activity may create health risks by impeding the development of a person's emotional, cognitive, and interpersonal skills that are crucial to satisfactory sexual functioning and general well-being. So, and several of the researchers speak to this. And that's the thing that I try to teach in when I go and teach sex ed, is that it's not just about your physical functioning and your physical safety around using condoms and protecting yourself from pregnancy, et cetera, but that you learn to talk about it, that you learn to deal with your emotions around it and to be in touch with your values and your, you know, belief systems and your family values and everything else that's going to come into play there. And what do you know? How much do you know about everything so that when, you know, you can address these issues that may come up, or to have the emotional maturity to deal with the things that come up, or, you know, making a choice around protecting yourself and who's the right person to be with and who's the right person to lose your virginity to. I hate to use those words still, actually. But anyway, lots of things to consider and lots of things to learn. Learning about sex is one of those things that will take you your entire life.
Yeah, it's a lifetime. It's a love affair with
sex. Lots to learn.
Tons.
Yeah.
Tons. And it's interesting with this, where the sexual experts that aren't affiliated with the study, they've been saying that the research offers some interesting avenues for learning about certain types of sexual problems that may be devastating to long-term relationships. Just clinically, they are seeing lots of individuals who marry late and have had little or no sexual experience have a really great difficulty developing a sexual and satisfying experience within their relationship.
Well, they have nothing to learn from or base things on and talk about, and it's such a sensitive topic for so many people that they just sort of go into this dysfunctional pattern and just get stuck there. You know? And if you have relationships that you can experience your sexuality in and talk about it and learn new things, and then, you know, the next lover you have might be a little bit more open-minded and describe things more to you or ask you to do certain things, and then you learn. I mean, it's skills take time to learn and to master, and communication takes practice. And
practice makes perfect.
It's like if you marry late and you don't have much sexual experience or any, and you're going to have more difficulty creating these sort of things.
And I think it also is, after a certain age, it's almost embarrassed. You almost feel embarrassed to ask sometimes, where it's like, oh, gee, I should know how to do that already. Is there any lessons where I can learn sexual things? Which thankfully there is.
So one of the researchers does point out that sexual dysfunction is common, and I agree. I think it is. You know, there's a lot of hang-ups we have and a lack of education and lack of confidence that people don't have. And this all leads to sexual dysfunction, and men and women. So, you know, and having hang-ups can lead to physiological problems, like physical problems.
Mm-hmm.
Even though this particular research study that we're looking at stops short of indicating a causal relationship between the age in which a person loses his or her virginity and sexual problems they may experience later, one of the researchers said a number of possible factors could contribute, and I agree with that, too.
Yeah, Eli Coleman, he's one of the researchers, says from a clinical standpoint, there are often dynamics other than the desire to be abstinent until marriage. Things like such as fear of intimacy, things like body image problems, alcohol and drug abuse, and sexual dysfunction. Mm-hmm. So he adds that these factors might actually influence the delay of sexual debut as a way of just avoiding all the sexual issues,
mm-hmm.
which that makes a lot of sense.
That's right. And, you know, conditioning that results in shame over sexual expression can also be a factor. There's Gina Ogden. She's a Boston-based sexuality expert and author of The Heart and Soul of Sex. I've read Gina's work, and she says in her sex therapy office, I see countless women and men who have received messages about sex that shame them about their sexual feelings and also terrify them about their sexual behavior. And these messages, she says, you know, although they can differ between men and women, that it seems to be across the board that people have this shame. So for women, she said, the message that good girls should not engage in or enjoy sex may cause women to shut down sexually, and that's almost always guaranteed to lead to dysfunction.
And one of the many dysfunctions that arise is that women never develop the ability to ask for what they want, which leaves them open to lifelong disappointment, desire disorders, orgasmic dysfunction. Worse yet, they're ripe for abuse and violence, she says,
mm-hmm.
which is actually really, really scary.
Mm-hmm. So Gina Ogden is saying that for men, they have this opposite message that there's a real men score, you know, like to be a real man, you have to get laid and, you know, you're not really a man if you don't know how to have sex or be a good lover or whatever. Keep it hard as long as your, you know, lover needs you to or wants you to, and you don't come too soon, etc. And all these pressures lead to negative mindsets, both among those who lose their virginity early and those who become sexually active only later in their life, both these mindsets that will impact their ability to perform sexually. So lots of pressure on men and women, but kind of this opposite message thing, you know, good girls don't do it and don't talk about it. And, you know, a cool guy gets it on and knows how to do it well. So
mm-hmm. like the daddy and the pimp getting it for their son. So it just goes right back to all that stuff
mm-hmm.
sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the intimate link between psyche and sexual performance, some sexuality experts say the results of these conditions will most likely bring about the sexual dysfunction through the psychological impacts.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was trying to describe earlier. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The dysfunction comes from your mindset being off, you know? I think we have a call, but I'm afraid to answer.
Yeah, I know. Dare I?
Yeah.
Let's see who it is.
CITR.
No,
it's live.
Oh, no, I don't know what's going on there.
Do you want to hold on for a moment? Thanks.
What is our caller saying?
He's got an interesting question. We can get him on the air.
Can we pop him up?
Do you
want to
put him on the phone? Okay.
Go ahead, caller.
Thanks for
Welcome
calling.
To Juicebox.
What was your question?
Mike, you've been talking about at least one study from Stanford. Talking about people starting early or starting late in terms mm-hmm. of their sexual experience. Just wondering, do they mention what the median age actually is? Like, is 18 average?
They kind of allude to 17, 18 as being kind of the
standard
age. If you haven't lost it by then you're in the late category. I would sort of say it really depends. It depends on so many factors. But I think for men, it's probably important to not start too early, you know, because, again, the penile functioning is not quite sorted till they're about 17. They're suggesting...
Not to mention the emotional growth.
Right, we're not... Yeah, haven't... Exactly, thank you. So, you know, and late is 21 to 23, according to this study, so...
All right.
That's what they're talking about. In my personal opinion, my professional opinion, I think it's very... dependent on how you've been raised, how comfortable you are talking about sex, you know, beyond the physiology, right?
When
I was mentioning the physiology, I think it's when you're a boy, you actually aren't sexually functioning fully until you're 16, 17, even 18 for some boys. So, and of course, they develop later than girls do. And for girls, you know, our bodies are ready when we're probably 14, 15, but, you know, again, like you suggested, our emotional, social, et cetera, you know, like all of that has to come with it. So if you were raised in a very open family that educated you from the beginning, they were very free with their sexuality, you know, masturbation was encouraged, communication and, you know, maybe dating, early dating, et cetera, and you feel, you know, physically, psychologically, socially ready, then that's your personal choice.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, so when did you lose your virginity, my good caller tonight?
How old were you? Way too young. I was 14.
Okay.
How did that go? Pardon me?
How did that go for you?
How did that go? At the time, I thought it was the best 14 seconds of my whole life. But, yeah, on reflection, now I'm old now. I'm 38 or whatever now. Well, old.
Older. Watch it.
Yeah, sorry.
That's okay.
On reflection, it would have been a lot better for me to have waited a number of years.
Why was that?
You know, why was that exactly? It wasn't a very respectful experience for the girl that I was involved with. You know, I was a standard 14-year-old boy, like, woo, got laid, and then I was out of there, like, not emotionally connected, not emotionally prepared for the whole experience, really.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, it didn't happen again for another 3 years. So I was 17 or 18 and involved in a longer-term relationship.
And did that go okay?
Yeah, that was much better. It would have been better to have waited.
Right. Okay.
Ideally,
and is that because you're emotional? Like you feel guilty? Is that why you feel that you should have waited? Like you. Is it the guilt that
really
you felt?
Or was it like the pressure?
No, I just didn't really have. I didn't really have much of a context for the experience. Certainly there was guilt to some degree, but really, it's like I'd had this experience, but really. Didn't know what to do with it, you know.
Right.
Isn't very well put, but that's about the best I can come up with. Right.
Well, thanks for answering under pressure. I appreciate that.
Yeah, come on, give me some warning.
And your reflections were great. I appreciate you calling as well.
Thank you.
Cheers. Good night.
Thanks.
Good night.
Yeah. So you know, spoken like a true 14-year-old virgin, losing popping his cherry early. Too early is not good. And in fact, I think probably doing it later is probably less risky than starting too early, in my professional opinion. But
and of course, we wouldn't know this personally because both of us are virgins, right?
Yes, we're virgins. And I don't know anything about this whole social, emotional, psychological preparation that you had.
From experience.
Right. So I think, you know, Eli Coleman is saying that the study's interesting because it suggests that sexual experimentation is a normal developmental process. And when this process is inhibited or it's not guided or not educated about, there can be very poor sexual health outcomes. And as a sex educator, I absolutely agree. I mean, you need to kind of continue working, you know, learning about your sexuality, talking about it, like any other skill-building, communication-based activity in your life, you need to sort of practice and experiment and talk about it and develop over time. You know, I worked long ago with a sex educator who runs a big store in Vancouver here now, the Art of Loving Gallery, and him and I were trying to put together a step-by-step intimacy-building sexual experimentation kind of workshops for young people that are interested in learning to be good lovers or learning to sort of go down the pathway of getting into sexuality.
I would have loved to have taken that when I was 16 years old.
I know so many people are earlier. Yeah, it's always good to be prepared beforehand. I'm open to teaching these things. If anybody wants to sign your kids up, I can definitely do a workshop series with you and your youth that might be interested in learning to, you know, go about this very big minefield, potential minefield of sexuality as healthfully as possible. So anyway, So what else is this guy saying? Patty Britton, president of the ASECT, which is the Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. She wrote a book called The Art of Sex Coaching and a few other things. And Patty Britton says that there are mostly, if not exclusively, psychological factors at play based on poor sexual skills that lead to a poor sexual debut or virginity losing with lasting negative effects. So mostly psychological, based on poor sexual skills. And that leads to the insecurities that come with it and the inability to talk about it, those kind of things. So, but Coleman was saying, Eli Coleman said that the biological factors may also be involved, and probably both biological and psychological factors at play, which cannot be elucidated from this study, actually. The researchers are sort of saying they need to conduct more to explore these factors, but I think a well-thought-out study about the several factors involved. And then the role of abstinence-only education. The researchers in the study say that the primary evidence points out detrimental effects to abstinence-only education. I think Caroline and I talked about that earlier in the mm-hmm. show, that the authors, right, the study lends credence to research showing that abstinence-only education may actually increase health risks, adding that other approaches may be better equip young people to avoid short- and long-term sexual health consequences. And although, you know, our findings are saying support an association between early initiation and long-term STI risk, they also suggest a more complicated picture of sexual functioning. And this is from Sanford and his colleagues. So it says, on average, respondents said that they had sex for the first time around the ages of 17 or 18, and those who had their first sexual encounter at an average age of 14 were considered early starters, and those who started at age 22 or older were considered later starters, which is the answer to our caller's question. We hadn't gotten to that little bit of a subtext there. So again, not really possible to determine cause and effect from the survey data. You know, I think young men with sexual problems may start having intercourse at a later age, which contributes to the link between later sexuality and higher odds of dysfunction. But the findings do lead credence to other studies suggesting that abstinence-only education may actually increase the risk of health problems. So are you listening, United States? Sex education that is supportive and acknowledges the diverse needs of young people might actually prevent the negative outcomes that are observed in this research and a lot of other studies as well that I've read over the many years of studying the subject. So we're going to take a break, I think, a little bit of a mm-hmm. short break here as before we ramble on more about the study. I think it's a good one. Thanks for finding it, Caroline. I must tell you, you are in CITR, that is at 101.9 FM in Vancouver. We are Juicebox Radio, and your hosts, Caroline McGillivray, Julia Saunders, will be back right after this short little break. Thanks for listening.
Oh, sweet, sweet Waldo. Now, Waldo, I hope you find some friends.
Oh, Mom, you know I'm not like other guys. I'm nervous and my socks are too loose.
Sit down, Waldo.
Know what's going on around town? LiveMusicVancouver.com is the Lower Mainland's comprehensive source for live music listings. We've got more than 350 shows listed at any time, and our listings are updated continuously by hundreds of the very people who put on the shows you love. Artist information and MP3s are accessible right from the listings, as are maps and calendars for virtually every venue in the city. All this and tons more totally free at LiveMusicVancouver.com.
Juicebox is a sexuality education show geared to adult audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
And we are back.
Tonight, it's back to school sex, and we're going to be talking about negotiating the first time. How are you going to manage having sex? Now, it's not just if you as a virgin first experiencing, say, penis-vagina intercourse, but also for each new experience you might want to have, like anal sex. So many people are so bad at that and they do it really wrong.
Or a threesome.
Or a threesome, or your first time with a new partner. I mean, every time you have a new partner, you've got to go back to the beginning.
Or even masturbation, self-sex.
Self-abuse? No.
Actually, that book you were reading earlier, we talked about that quite a bit.
I am reading this book, yes. It's very good. It's based in 1916, so they were calling masturbation self-abuse. And this one, the author is calling it...
something pleasure.
Personal patience. Teaching herself patience.
That's right, because she's trying to wait till she gets married.
Wait till she gets married.
So she's taking care of herself in between.
That's right. Anyway, so negotiate the first time. So really, basically, tonight we're going to get onto the reality check, and we're going to get onto some, things you need emotionally, physically, et cetera, to have these sexual experiences, and some of the real nitty-gritties. We're just going to get right down to that.
We are. We got all the facts in the first half. Second half, we're going to give you the goods.
No, really. I mean, obviously, you need to, you know, sexual experiences involve communication. We get into that a lot. We're not going to get over that right now. It talks a lot about values and boundaries and negotiation, and that's really a big part of what I teach when I do sex ed, is all about that stuff with the youngins. But tonight, we're just getting to the reality check. The reality check. Sex is not necessarily going to do any of the following for you.
Guarantee a longer or closer relationship, give you an orgasm or mind-blowing pleasure, feel great the first time or feel like hell, either way. And it will not give you status with your friends, make you feel more mature or grown up or a real man or a woman.
Really, in the reality, it doesn't. So might be very passing if any of these things happen. But
just like our caller was saying earlier, he felt great right away afterwards, but afterwards it made him really think about things. And he waited a couple of more years until he was more serious with someone.
And he looks back and thinking he has regrets about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot to think about when you're deciding if it's right for you to have sex, or it's right for you to have anal sex, or it's right for you to have a threesome, or it's right for you to have intercourse for the first time, whatever it is. There's lots of questions to ask your partner, like, why do I want to do this? Who do I want to do this for? What do I expect from this experience? And to bear in mind that a good 30% of people never have sex again with the partner they lose their virginity to. So
30%.
Only about 25% of women usually report enjoying first intercourse physically, though many more do enjoy it on an emotional level. And less than 8% report orgasm from first intercourse. So these are kind of bummers if you're going into sex thinking that you're going to be getting a whole bunch out of it. So that's kind of the reality check on that.
That could be very difficult on the wedding night when you want a perfect day.
Yeah, so...
So we've got a big checklist of material items, don't we?
Are you prepared?
So number one, latex condoms, good ones.
Make sure that you both know how to use them.
Yes, and
they're
I do
not
teach
easy
how
to use.
And I do include teaching them how to put it on with your mouth in some of my workshops.
That's some talent I'd have to witness, honey. Do you have a large bottle of lubricant? I mean, doesn't necessarily have to be large, but the more you get, the better. Lubricant is very helpful, and I don't recommend KY jelly, but things like Astroglide or... Oh My is a good one, etc. Okay, water soluble, that kind of thing. Make sure you have a secondary method of birth control if you want to, or contraceptive control to use with the condoms to protect yourself from STIs, but a backup method of some sort, because condoms break and sometimes people get lazy, and make sure that you have a backup.
The next one is more for vaginal sex, because it horrifies me otherwise, having a towel and a stock of menstrual pads.
Well, if you're losing your virginity, if you're popping your cherry, sometimes the cherry can bleed.
That's true. I just had this vision of anal and blood gushing everywhere, because as we know, there's just the one membrane back there. And if you end up with the anal tearing or anal abscesses, you might end up in the hospital because of infections. So you want to make sure you're doing it properly. And Nita Hartley has some great videos in terms of how to.
It's good if you have some money set aside, because a sex budget is always a good idea, just in case you might need... all kinds of things. It might be about contraceptive control. It might be about safer sex items. It might be about testing. It might be about an abortion.
Toys.
Who knows? Morning after, whatever. So it's always good to have a sex budget to put that into your school budget there, kids. And make sure that you have a health insurance policy, because there's a lot of things that might go wrong, or things you might need, or STI testing you should be getting done every 3 months if you're having different kinds of partners, etc. And then if you do get pregnant and you decide you want to have it, make sure that you are able to get the support and visits to the doctor and etc. that you will need to pay for these services, right?
Exactly.
So anyway, we are going to just move on to if you want to be sexual and you are preparing yourself to have sex, you have to make sure that you have regular doctor checkups and infection testing, and that you're in good health and that your partner is in good health, because, you know, it's really crucial that you take care of your health. And the only way to do that is to be informed about it, to know about it, to get regular tests, etc. So please, I know this might seem obvious, but do go to the doctor and get regular checkups. I think men are especially bad at this. I can't tell you how many men I know in their 40s that haven't never had a physical in their lives. I think I'm like, dude, you should have been having fingers up your bum like 5 years ago.
I think it's because of the swab just from the tip that they used to do. And I don't think they do
have
that
urine
anymore.
Tests now, urine tests.
They do, but I think a lot of people remember how painful those ones were. Mm-hmm. And we thought that swabs inside hurt us.
That's a good point.
So I think that's why I think it traumatized them at an early age.
It's true. Another thing on the physical level is that you understand your anatomy and that you understand your partner's anatomy, as well as the basics of what you're talking about, human reproduction, etc. I cannot tell you, I go and teach some students, I show up at grade 11, they have no idea, telling them what a clitoris is and where it is, the urethra, etc. And it's like, holy cow. So do make sure you're aware of anatomy, people.
Sweetheart, there's women and men out there who don't know where their own clitoris is.
I understand.
Or their partner's clitoris, for that matter.
Yeah, well, hopefully they're listening. So get a mirror, figure it out, get your little book out. There's books to be had about these things. There's things on the internet as well. Not always the best things, but some picture to start from. Anyway.
Making sure that you know when you're sexually aroused and also know when you're not. So then that way, when you choose to have sex, you're doing it because you want to.
And you know, you know the difference between getting aroused and not being aroused. And if you aren't in the mood or you're not getting aroused, why that might be happening and not just be in a total state of confusion.
Definitely.
Blaming your partner for whatever is happening or not happening with you. And just to be able to relax, you know, I think it's really important with sexuality on both male and female fronts that you are able to relax. Sex should be a relaxing activity. I mean, it can be active for sure, but it shouldn't be with anxiety, fears, you know, shame, pain, all that stuff. That shouldn't be a part of it unless you want it to be, unless you're into that sort of thing.
Master and servant.
Thank you. So, yeah, and, you know, as we were sort of talking about earlier in the show, there's relationship things. There's social items that have to be considered when you're negotiating your first time. Relationship items. Okay. You're able to create limits, to say no when you want to, that you can trust your partner, that's going to respect your limits, that's going to show that you have healthy boundaries, that your partner will respect your boundaries. Very, very important. If somebody shows signs of not respecting your boundaries and you've made requests about them, that's a really bad sign that this person is abusive and that they're controlling and that you need to get the hell away from them. I'm sorry, but it's like if you put up a boundary and someone doesn't respect that, that's a really bad sign.
No, it's key, and it goes both ways.
It's very unhealthy.
Whether or not it's a heterosexual couple where the woman is doing the guy up the ass with a strap on.
Anything, if you have a limit and you create a limit, you communicate that limit and the person doesn't respect that limit and doesn't respect your boundaries, you're in some serious trouble. It's just, I'm telling you, it's a word of warning and... please heed that this person is not to be trusted. Yes, would you like to comment on that?
I do, actually. I just wanted to say, just make sure that, and I know we've talked about code words when we've talked about threesomes before, making sure that your partner knows what the code word is. Mm-hmm. So if you say stop and they think that that means to go, that's not a good thing. But I think you were mentioning last week about using the word yellow, for example, something that's really out of that. So then that way it's like, oh, yeah, that's right. We agreed that one. Whereas sometimes stop can sound like yes.
Yeah. Depends on what kind of power play you're doing.
Exactly.
But again,
for humiliation games.
Right. So again, this is about creating limits, knowing what is a no for you, knowing that you've communicated that to the person, you know, and just being able to navigate whether they're going to be respecting your boundaries and that you can trust them and that you can trust yourself, right? If you can't trust yourself either, then there's some relationship items that you need to work on before you start having sex with somebody else.
And sometimes even before you start having a relationship with somebody else, like if you're not turned on and you're having sex just to please your partner, like they advocated in the 1950s in some of the articles in Homemaker and Homemaker and those type of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually really scary.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You should always be able to talk comfortably, and you should always be able to describe when you don't like something. I think that's really important. So emotional items as well, there's quite a few of those. I think, you know, to prepare yourself for sexual experiences, you have to know that what's right or wrong for you, and to be able to take full responsibility for your emotions, for your expectations, for whatever actions might happen, to know that you can handle what you've created or what's happening, that you can handle being disappointed or confused or upset, that you can handle talking to your family about it if they find out. Can you talk to them or friends? Can you go to them for emotional support? These are all emotional checklists for you to see if you're ready to you know, engage yourself in sexual experiences. That you understand, for example, if you have never had intercourse, that you know that it could change your relationship for good. And actually, any kind of sexual experience you have with a person can change your relationship. So being able to emotionally handle that change that most likely will come down the pipeline from, for example, if you start having anal sex, or if you start bringing in a threesome, or if you start, you know, having sex for the first time with your partner, it's going to change the relationship.
Yes, you can definitely never go back.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that you really care about your partner, their health, their emotions, and their general well-being, and just to act accordingly. And I think that does go back in terms of the boundaries, but just on other levels too, just kind of read them on all different levels, even if what doesn't come out of their mouth. Just listening to, on those levels, reading the body language, listening to their tone of voice, all those things, and just really listening to what they want and not being afraid to ask them.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a checklist that you can, these checklists that we're talking about, you can go to your partner and discuss all the items on them. And you might find that discussing sort of these situations or the realities of what happens in relationship and in sexuality, that can make a really big difference for your relationship, for how things are going to go down the road with you, and things, you know, all kinds of aspects of growth, personal growth, relationship growth, emotional growth, all of that, so that you know that what you're going to do isn't going to be regretted later. Mm-hmm. On after the fact, or that if there are some bumps along the way, that you can kind of return to the earlier conversations that you might have had. Again, always a good idea to kind of negotiate these first times carefully in your mind first, getting clear what it is that you want, why you want it, what you're looking for in the experience, and then when you do come to your partner to discuss these sensitive topics, that you have some clarity that you can share with them and some boundaries that you can be clear about and share. And then when they express themselves to you, that you can negotiate something that's going to work for both of you, as opposed to just following somebody willy-nilly and then feeling like a victim, or that mm-hmm. you've been pulled into something that you later regret, or, you know, you don't feel that you got your needs met because you weren't being communicative about it, or your family never let you talk about sex, so you feel you can't talk about it now with your partner, and that's not going to help you. You should be able to talk about it, or you shouldn't be doing it. That's kind of one of the rules that I usually teach to students. You know, if you can't talk about it, you're not ready to do it. And it's a really easy thing to help you to stay safe,
mm-hmm.
because you should be planning for condom use. You should be practicing and knowing how to use them. You should be having a backup method beyond condoms to protect yourself from pregnancy. If you're a woman, et cetera, if you're having heterosexual sex, you know, there's a lot of aspects that need to be considered and regarded. And it's a lot to look at. So, you know, there isn't a statute of limitations on your sex life, and it doesn't need to begin or end with intercourse or any other sex act you may be thinking or trying for the first time. You can initiate any level of sex at any time during your life and change what you want to do as you go along, determining any time what is best for you or for your partner. And you know what, if you haven't checked out all of the things on the list that Caroline and I were talking about, do take a good look at the ones that you didn't check and try to figure out what you need to do for yourself right now. Because there's no reason to set yourself up for a fall or rush into something that won't be enjoyable or rewarding, when it's not going to go away if you wait. You can always just, you know, take your time to think about things and talk about them and not rush into stuff.
And be really honest with yourself. Really honest, because mm-hmm. above all, you've got to do what's right for you.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
It's really important.
Mm-hmm.
So we hope you enjoyed tonight's show. We're going to be talking about some more things.
First time's virginity. What were you saying? Dating a virgin,
Dating a virgin, how to date a virgin, whether it's a male virgin, a female virgin, whatever you'd like, virgin. And I'm not talking cocktails, honey.
And you have some other great articles that you found that we'll be probably addressing next week, and then we might get a little saucy and get back into the teacher, hot for teacher, schoolgirl, boy fantasies in the school, the forbidden realm of that fantasy world that seems to be quite popular for people.
It's very popular, and it's too bad our listeners can't see me since I'm wearing a little short pleated skirt and little ruffled panties. And a button-down shirt and little ruffled socks.
Mm-hmm, like heels. The picture you put up on Facebook for the Juicebox Radio fan club.
It was quite lovely, wasn't it?
Yes, I love it. You're very good at these sort of things, honey. Thank goodness for you, because I'm just too busy working on Wednesdays to put it together. I'm so glad you're here to help me and to do the show with me. It's so fabulous.
Well, thank you. I like doing it with you. Oh. And you can read all the words that I can't. a lot of medical knowledge.
Yes, well, it's got to come in handy, this $90,000 education I've received. Now, back to school. We usually like to do this when we first come back in September. All the little freshies are out there drinking their faces off and probably having unprotected sex tonight as we speak in the dorm rooms and everywhere else. So I'm hoping that someday you might get this message before you start to screw your life up. Caroline and I should do more of a blitz, I think.
Definitely.
And get the kids listening to Juicebox Radio and learning about how to negotiate the realm of sexuality healthfully and happily, yeah?
Yes, exactly. And hopefully they're not too drunk while they're doing it.
Yes.
Oh. Yes. Hopefully there's no more puke down those stairs.
Oh, my God. You got to love first week back at UBC, and I'm sure every other university in the world. A bit of a mayhem situation going on. Lots of fresh faces, very excited, and their hormones are raging as they all come together into a very close location. With half their clothes that they should be wearing on because it's quite cold out there. But
well, they all grew up to Britney Spears.
It's all about being sexy,
sexy.
All right, so next up is Hans von Kloss, Misery Hour, with Marion. He is in the house with his incredible outfit, I'm sure. I haven't seen him yet, but he is behind the door. He looks really good, I'm sure. He always does.
I want his pants.
And he's
waving.
And
I'm not just talking off around his ankles. I'm talking his pants. I just don't think they'll look as good on me as they do on him.
So Hans von Kloss's Misery Hour is 2 hours of really fucking amazing music, actually. Pardon my French. I love it. I love his music. So do listen and give him your undivided attention for the next couple of hours. And next week, Caroline and I will be back.
With How to Date a Virgin. Will it be a virgin of anal sex? Whether it be a virgin from intercourse or what? Ever.
Now, is this how to get what you want out of a virgin as well?
It's that, and okay. It's also as a virgin how to deal with it.
Fabulous. Well, we look forward to hearing about your hard-worked research, Honey Buns.
Thank you, darling.
All right, so signing off, we'll catch you next week at the sexy hour of 10 o'clock. O'clock.